Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Movie Review Show. My name is Tosin and I shall be your host for the next hour as we go through filmy stuff and business and all that. With me in the studio as always are Sharon.
Hello.
Hi Sharon and Sean.
Hiya.
Hello Sean. And now this week, I mean, we've had a bit of one of those busy weeks as we're feeling a little bit kind of like end of year-y. We've been doing reviews of Two weeks ago, we spoke about our best films of the year. Last week, we spoke about our worst films of the year. And this week, I think we're going to continue on that trend because of something that's been going on our Facebook page. But you guys, what happened this week?
Well, there's not been a lot. There's not been a lot new, is there, really?
No, it's been a bit of a film famine because life has taken over.
Yeah, and I just think there hasn't been a lot on. It's been the same stuff that we've already seen. That is
kind of true. I mean, no one's really got, you don't really want to release stuff in the week run up to Christmas. I mean, who's going to watch it? I don't know. Although I think that there was something, I can't remember, there was some film that I was thinking. Well, I've seen Jumanji.
Yeah. I didn't think that was out till tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been out a week.
What, has it been in? How did I miss that then? Because I generally check the thing, because I probably would have checked that one out.
Yeah, yeah.
Jumanji's been out a week.
Yeah, well, yeah. I saw it last week. Yeah, I saw Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle last week. So for anybody who's listening in who actually go in touch with us on Facebook, thank you very much. We are going to quickly talk about Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, and then we're going to get straight on to your choices for best films of the year. So, you guys haven't seen this. I've seen this. Yep. So, have you seen the original Jumanji?
I have,
yes.
That was released like 1996, I think, or something like that. 95, 96. Robin Williams. It was all about this board game that when you played stuff on the board game, it actually came out of the game into the real world, and it was supposed to be this wildlife safari thing and all that. And so, obviously, nowadays, you think that Hollywood is showing a bit of a dearth of ideas and just trying to reboot everything and recreate everything and sequelize everything. So, this film, from the word go, seems a little bit like you're just trying to do that again. You're just trying to sort of like find something that is you just can't let it lie. You can't leave it well enough alone. You're kind of like, oh yeah, let's go get Jumanji back. But I think they actually do quite well with this. I think they do quite well with this. So the whole idea is that they've brought it up to date, and Jumanji is no longer just a board game the way it was in the original. It's now a video game. So there's these four kids that you have, and you have like, it's a little bit Breakfast Club at the beginning. You have a guy who's a bit of a nerd, and when you first meet him in the film, he's doing somebody else's homework and all that kind of stuff. You have a guy who is like the jock, the star quarterback, kind of, who's the one who's doing the homework for. You have a girl who's just like, you know, the Instagram queen. You can see she's like the most popular girl. When you see her, she's sort of like taking pictures of herself and going, no, deleting, posing and taking pictures. And she's like, oh, no, I need better light. Taking pictures of herself, like, you know, constantly attached to her phone, always tweeting, always. And so you have, and then you have a girl who is kind of a bit like, you know, the weird one who just sort of keeps quiet and everything. Like, you can say, oh, obviously she's smart, but everything like that, but she's not popular and all that.
So like the Breakfast Club, you've got the brain, you've got the athlete,
exactly.
You've got the princess.
Yes.
And I can't remember what they called Ali Sheedy's character, but she was the nut job or whatever, wasn't
she? Yeah, the weirdo.
Like the cabin in the woods, I guess. Yeah.
So obviously you have all these characters, and so they're kind of stock characters, your stock high school characters, and they all get sent into detention together. Through one way or another, one says something to a teacher, they end up in detention together, where they find this old game, and they're like, oh, this is a bit weird. And so they start playing it. And the difference is that where in the other Jumanji, when you play the game came into the real world. This one, the characters get sucked into the game. And they get sucked into the game and they take on whatever avatar that they've chosen in the game to do that. So they go into the game and the geek becomes the rock. The sort of 6 foot tall quarterback guy becomes Kevin Hart, who
who is not a 6 foot tall quarterback.
And he actually, at obviously Kevin Hart knows about this. He jokes often about his height, and he has this line, which is one of the lines of the film, where he goes, "What, you think you've got a bad? I'm in the top 2 feet of my body." And so you have the quarterback becomes Kevin Hart, the geeky girl becomes Karen Gillan. She becomes
a nice twist.
Yeah, so the geeky girl becomes Karen Gillan, who's called a character called Ruby Roundhouse, who's obviously based on Lara Croft.
Yeah,
because at the same time it's making fun of video games, and it's making fun of, like, the fact is, like, they're in a jungle, and she lands there, and she's dressed like Lara Croft in that. She has, like, the crop top, and she's wearing shorts, and she's like, "Why am I dressed like this? We're in the middle of a jungle."
And she gets bitten by everything.
Exactly. She's like, "We're in the middle of a jungle, why am I dressed like this?" And then the girl who was the Instagram queen becomes Jack Black.
Cool. Why would she pick that?
They didn't show them the pictures of what the people looked like. They just had the names, and, like, they had the name of his character, and it said something like, you know, Curvy Explorer. And so she's like,
right.
"Oh yeah, hey, Curvy Explorer."
I'm with you. Okay.
So she chooses that, and she becomes, so then they go into it, and it becomes like this sort of adventure movie, a bit sort of like sub Indiana Jones kind of thing, as they're going through, as they figure out they have to play their way through the levels to actually get out of the game. And I feel like there's some things that are really, really well observed in the film, and the way they actually, the characterizations, I think it's really, really cool to see that there's bits of the film where you can still see the kids at the beginning of the film in the performances of all these people. I think Jack Black is brilliant. There's actually for a large part of the film, I forgot Jack Black was in the film. And even when I think about it now, I'm not seeing Jack Black. I'm seeing a 15-year-old girl trapped in a man's body. And there's especially a sequence in it where Jack Black has to teach Karen Gillan how to flirt to this. And so you have Jack Black walking around going, "Yeah, you got to do it like this and like that." And he keeps going, "Excuse me, where's my phone? I really, really need to Instagram this right now." So the film, it has a little bit of a charm. It has a bit of I would say a little bit of like a Sunday afternoon charm. Sunday afternoon, put it on and enjoy that charm. It runs out of steam a little bit, I think. I think it runs out of ideas. I think it doesn't really, it says it's a video game, but it doesn't really keep to the format of what a video game would be like. I think Bobby Cannavale, he plays the bad guy in the video game. And I think he's actually really... The problem is, obviously, because he's a video game bad guy, he has to stick to a certain thing that happens to him, and he has to stick to a certain...
Yeah.
But apart from that, he the way he plays the character, I think Bobby Cannavale is... I think he's just brilliant to watch anyway. I think he's brilliant to watch anyway, and I think he was like, that's a character I would like to see more of. But obviously, because of the restrictions of the...
Is there any homages to the original?
There is. Cool. There's. This is a film that acknowledges that the original film exists. Okay. It acknowledges there's one particular way in which they do that I think is quite nice in the way they sort of. They go, like, "Yes, we know the original film exists. We know that it's there. Yeah. We're not ignoring it." And it's so. There isn't loads, but there's some in there. And there are. The bits of it which I think, like, I think The Rock and Kevin Hart work quite well together. The only thing that I would have thought is, well, the only thing for me is that I think it's really, really funny how they took a young girl and put her in Jack Black's body and had Jack Black play a young girl, pretty much. I thought that was really, really funny. But I think it would have been nice if they'd gone the other way as well. If they'd had a guy go into a woman's body and go into the game. And I think that would have been... That's just a little thing for me, because I was watching it going, "What?" I'm kind of aware that we started out with two women and two men, and now we've replaced one of the women with a man. It's funny, but at the same time... But I think that's just because that's been in the news a lot. It just sort of sparked in my head, and I thought, yeah, that would have been cool as well. And they do something kind of cool with there's a fifth character in the game, and they do something that okay, it's Jumanji. There's not much to say to spoil it, but I still will like to keep it back and say they do something.
That's good. Well, I'll probably go watch that.
Yeah, there's a fifth character in the game, and I quite like what they do with them. I like what they use the conventions of the game that they're in some cool ways. So I would give that a 3 out of 5.
Right.
I'd say cool. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Good. It's quite funny. When the original Jumanji came out, I had a nephew who was very, very young. And you know, there's like vines under a carpet,
mm-hmm.
and we were in was at my mum's place, who was around there, and she had a mat, you know, she had one of these big mats.
Yeah.
And he was like terrified of it. He was like, oh, and then he just hated this mat. He didn't want to be anywhere near this mat because he thought there were going to be lots of vines and things coming out. So, yeah. So, I mean, it had a bit of an impact I think, when it first came out. And Robin Williams, well, he was.
Yeah. Robin Williams was. It was really
and
good.
The Hunter.
That.
Yeah.
What was the Hunter called? I can't remember the name.
I can't remember what the Hunter was called. No. I thought it was a hunter who was just chasing him.
He was chasing him. Yeah.
He was just chasing him through chasing Alan Parrish around.
And
then he'd been chasing him for like 20 years or something like that.
Yeah. That'd be worth revisiting, I think.
Well, I think it is. I think some of the, even when it was released, some of the effects I thought that doesn't really look real. But I still think it. I think the original Jumanji was a fun film.
It was,
and
yeah.
I think this second one is, it's in that same vein.
It doesn't
disgrace itself. It doesn't make you feel, oh my god, why didn't you just leave it alone?
Because I saw the trailer when I first saw the trailer. I thought, this doesn't look so good. But then I saw a different trailer and I thought, it had possibilities, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and I think it's quite good because they try and give every character something. The one that was really worried about was Karen Gillan, and it could just really be, oh look, hot woman in like, you know, crop top running through the jungle. Isn't this nice? But they actually try and give every character something, and there's like an arc. So when I don't think it's a spoiler to say by the end of the film, like, you know, they finally make it to the final level and all that kind of stuff. And because it's obviously the Breakfast Club in a jungle, so it's like you have obviously when they get together, it doesn't feel totally hackneyed. It feels like, well, actually, I can believe that there's a bond between these characters now. I can kind of believe that. So yeah, and obviously, if it does well, they're going to bring out a third one, and we're going to see what is going to be now. Maybe Jumanji will become a phone app. Oh my god,
that makes sense. That's probably what they're aiming towards. Was there like a space one called
Zathura?
Zathura, that's it. Yeah,
Zathura, which was based on the same idea. Same idea, directed by Jon Favreau.
What was that like? Did you watch that?
I never watched it. But I heard very good things. It was like, it was supposed to be one of those hidden gems of the year that it was released, where no many people went to see it. But apparently, it's just a really good film. And Jon Favreau, when he's on form, he can be an amazing filmmaker.
Yeah.
He can be an amazing, amazing filmmaker. All right, now we are going to go away for some ads. And when we come back, we're going to go through our listeners' choices for best film of the year. I think this is going to be interesting.
That'd be interesting.
As I said, two shows ago, we did our top five of the year. And I think there's quite a few films that show up. And then there's some that are just surprising. All right, we'll see you guys after these messages.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666, or add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Hello and welcome back to the Movie Review Show. Now we go into the section of the show where we are going to talk about the listeners' top films of the year. So we put out a post on our Facebook page earlier today that said, well, we've had our say, what is your favorite film of 2017? And we've had people come back. Well, I want to thank you to everybody who actually put back. We're going to spend the rest of the show now going through your choices and talking about them. First off, we have Michael Dangerfield, who says, the most standout film of the year for me was Mother. Not sure if I liked it, but it gave me a lot to think about after, as well as nightmares.
Nightmares, wow.
Yeah. So, okay, now, where we did our top five, we did a top five list of the year. Mother showed up on both Sean and my top five list.
Yeah.
And
wasn't on mine because I hadn't seen it.
Yeah, you still haven't seen Mother.
No.
You still haven't seen Mother. And so, I think anybody who's seen Mother can understand what Michael's going on about.
Sure, definitely, yeah. No, I agree. It was. It took me a sort of day until lunchtime the next day to work out whether I liked it or not.
Yeah, and I just loved the fact that it made that much discussion.
Yeah,
that much discussion definitely. For something that nobody knew about beforehand. Like, for instance, we have Star Wars The Last Jedi out now, which is creating a whole different kind of discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's different because it was something that people knew about before, and people actually had, like, you know, some invested thing in it before the film was ever released.
I remember when I went to see it, and when everybody was coming out, and they all, it caused lots of discussion then from random people,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Wow, what was that all about? What was that? You know, you know, frowns on faces and people like wondering what it all was. Just talking. I think I walked down the street with like a bunch of people, and I walked the wrong way because we was in a conversation about what it was. And I thought, oh, excuse me, I'm going the wrong way.
I remember I went to see. I finished watching Mother in the cinema, and as I finished, there was a lady sat down with a gentleman beside me, and she just sort of turned to him as the film finished and went, "So you're going to explain what that was about to me?" And I absolutely love that. I think it's a film you can be picking. You can be picking over the bones of this for like weeks afterwards.
Yeah, definitely.
Just having a chat with friends about, okay, so what about that? I think this was that. And the funny thing is that even when we were chatting about it on air, and you said something that made me go, "Oh my word!
Yeah,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah."
And the thing is, as many things as you can say about the film, it's one of these weird films in which you're probably, no matter how people talk about it, you will probably all be right.
Yes. Yeah.
You'll probably all be right as to exactly what this film is about and what this film is trying to say. So yeah, good shot, Michael.
Good shot, Michael.
Good shot for Mother. I think Mother shows up a couple of times as well. We have Andrew Nordbrook, who says, "If you forced me to pick one, it would have to be Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk. Went to London just to watch it in 70mm IMAX.
Wow.
Yeah. An amazing visual treat with a soundtrack that gets your house, that gets your heart pounding."
Yeah, I can imagine actually see it. I mean, I went to see The Hateful Eight. I went up to Leicester Square to see The Hateful Eight when it came out on the 70mm Roadshow.
Yeah.
And there's just something about real film, something about 70mm film, because, well, most things are digital now, aren't they? In the cinemas, and they get beamed and digital's great and it's lovely and clear and you can sit close to the screen, whereas before, when it was film, you know, when it was celluloid, if you sat really close, you would
you'd just go blurry.
It'd go a bit blurry, but 70mm, that must have I can imagine. I mean, I didn't mind Dunkirk. I didn't think it was sort of super amazing, but seeing it in 70mm, I should imagine, would be quite a treat, so I might have enjoyed it more.
I think it was one of those films that was so highly anticipated that the worry was that it wouldn't quite deliver.
Yeah.
Because I saw the first trailer, I think, something like 6 months before they did the teaser trailer where they went on the mole and they looked around and then they all crouched.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's such a massive impact, even 6 months before it came out. So everyone's thinking, I just hope this is going to be good.
Sure, yeah.
And for me, it delivered. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I love that it did its own thing. It didn't bother by any hype. It didn't give you what you expected to see from a Dunkirk movie.
It was
Christopher Nolan seemed to be going, "Look, no, I know what I want to say here.
There's a story I'm telling.
There's a story I'm telling, and I'm going to go for it." And I think Dunkirk was probably the most immersive film of this year, because everything about the film, like it was mentioned, the soundtrack and all that kind of, it wasn't like trying to tell you a straight up, "Oh, this is what happened on the beach." It was kind of like, we're just trying to put you in there.
Some
of the sound designs, I think it's when the Oscars come around, I think it needs to be for things like sound design, and it needs to be up there, because I remember there's one particular scene where the planes are coming for them and start dropping bombs that fall progressively closer to the main character, and he's lying in the foreground, right, like up to the screen, and so these bombs are dropping closer and closer and closer, and I just remember the sound in the cinemas was and you felt like it was coming for you, and I felt like it was one of the most immersive films this year.
I think I agree, and I mean, we said this when we discussed it, is Tom Hardy, I think, can act with his eyes.
The RAF.
I mean, is
contingent.
I mean, surely sometime in the point he should be up for an Oscar.
He's won one already.
Has he?
Yeah, won. He won for that, you know, DiCaprio one where they were in the North Pole. Oh,
yes, I'm trying to think. Revenant.
That's
Revenant.
Revenant.
Revenant. But anyway, that's me.
He won for that, even though I think that was a travesty. He should have won for Legend.
Legend. That's exactly what I was going to say.
That is a
Legend.
Campaign I will continue fighting, definitely. Even though it's over. Yeah. There's no way he can win.
We need to get Tom Hardy so many times.
Recognition for the work he did in Legend.
He's great with his eyes. Oh, yeah, we got The Darkest Hour to look forward to as well.
Yes, that's coming up soon. That looks good.
Okay. All right, cool. So moving on. Andrew also says runners up for best film that he saw this year, Get Out.
That was an interesting movie.
Get Out, I thought, was really, it was a really great combination of B movie and social commentary. It was so, I felt like it was so well done, because you're watching it and you go, all right, this is a bit, when it starts off, you're like, ooh, ooh. And obviously for me, like, there's this party scene in Get Out where it's like, for me being black, it's like every awkward thing that has happened to you in a party where you're like the only black guy, all within like a 5 minute period of time. You're like, oh my god, oh yeah, oh that is so
so in fashion.
it's like the bit where he goes there and, like, you know, someone starts feeling his muscles going, you're really strong, and then someone else goes, oh yeah, I play golf at Titan, you know, Tiger.
Yeah.
And you have all those things, and then when it goes on, it's when it goes into a B movie, and I know some people thought that the B movie aspect of it was like, oh, that's a bit silly, but I think it still carries on with the message of what it's trying to say, especially for race relations in America. Yeah. And I thought it was masterful in the way it did that. I really, really liked Get Out. I thought it was like, it was a film that went away, and I was thinking, oh wow, oh, actually, ooh, that's a clever way of doing it, because when the fact that they put it in the guise of a B movie meant people would actually talk about it and people would connect with it. However, if you tried to make like a big worthy movie about race relations in America nowadays, I don't think that would have worked.
No.
I don't think people would have given it as much. A bit like a Suburbicon.
Suburbicon, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Suburbicon tried something like that, and it was a bit, nah, Get Out did that way better. And he also says Beauty and the Beast.
Yay.
Now, Sharon, this was your number one film of the year.
It was my number one, but it's my top five.
It was in your top five.
Yeah, with Dunkirk. So there was it's quite the contrast. But yeah, I think for a film that you can just enjoy and you can take the whole family to watch, there's not many times you can throughout the year that there's a genuine family film that appeals cross-generational. I mean, I went to see it with all adults, but I know that if you had children you would happily take them to see it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we just enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And see, I'm not a huge Disney fan because I don't like animation. So, to me, I have seen Beauty and the Beast as a cartoon. To me, it's just like, you know, it's all right. But I have enjoyed seeing their sort of live action versions of the Disney classics.
Because they did it just for you. They were like, there's a lady called Sharon Bull on the Isle of Wight who hasn't watched any of our films.
Yeah, she's not seen any.
We need to make them all live action, because then she'll watch them.
There's that pound needing to be exploited.
It's like she's finally seen The Jungle Book. That's why they're buying up everything. Fox, come over here. Yeah. We need to make sure Sharon Bolland sees everything.
She's got to watch these, yeah.
We're not going to rest until we have our films in her glasses. All right, cool. So, carrying on. Now, we have one that I think, Sean, you'd be happy with. John Greenham says The Belko Experiment.
Oh, yeah, Belko Experiment. I really enjoyed that. That was like one of the also-rans, which was, you know, and the top movie. It's basically, I guess if you've seen The Hunger Games, if you've seen
Battle Royale,
then it's that sort of premise where there's a group of office workers that are shut in an office block, and they're told you've got to survive, so you've got to kill people, and if you don't, then we're going to kill six people anyway. So, and yeah, it was great. That was really, really good movie, and one of the things that I really liked about it was one character that you think that hides and survives and all that, and you think, oh yeah, yeah, this is going to be the one,
the one who's left,
yeah, it's like bank. But, oh dear, they didn't see that coming. So there's a few moments in it. It's a great movie, great action, and I enjoyed the acting, and that there was quite a bit of fear and suspense. You know, the ending, I'm not so sure.
Because it was a smaller film this year. Yeah. A smaller film that just came out.
But well worth a watch. Well, if you enjoy Battle Royale and The Hunger Games, that you like that premise in movies, then this is the one to see.
All right, cool. And we have Joe Briscoe, who says Mother is undoubtedly the best film this year.
Yeah.
We've already spoken about that. And he throws in a couple of films that he says are the biggest disappointment and one which is probably the worst film of the year. However, we want to keep that for next week, because this week we want to focus on what people's favorite films were. Next week we'll get on to what the worst films are. Worst films of the year.
What year was Arrival?
Arrival was last year, 2016.
Last year, yeah, that's right, yeah. Because I was going to say with Joe there, I think that was probably... But that was last year, wasn't it? Yeah, because
we all know, well, we all know Joe. You know him probably the best of all, so you'll be able to say about that. And, okay, now, Glenn Spire says Manchester by the Sea. In his words, a serious drama about grief, death, and all those intense parts of life that we'd rather not watch a film about. The film also contains some nicely judged humour, the sort that is apparent within awkward human interactions.
That's an interesting comment.
Totally agree.
Wow.
I could not agree more with him on this. It's currently on Amazon Prime.
Because this is Casey Affleck, isn't it?
It's Casey Affleck. It's the film that Casey Affleck won the Best Actor Oscar for this year. And the film's beautiful. It's beautiful in a sort of like in a melancholic way. It's beautiful in a heart-rending way. But you know how you have some films that are a bit... You know, like how after Titanic was released, then they had all these films that were released that were supposed to be like, we're going to make the music swell here, and you're supposed to feel something here, and oh, look, he's dead, isn't he? Now give us all your money, because that's what you did when you went to see Titanic. And they tried to sort of like do all this sort of manipulative...
emotional blackmail.
Essentially, yeah, manipulative heartstring tugging thing. And Manchester by the Sea just feels very, very real. You feel for these characters. There's something like this. The central incident in the film just rips your heart out, quite frankly.
Mm.
And you can understand why it rips out the hearts of the characters, and then it's about them. Maybe they're trying to come back together and they're still trying to interact and all that. And I understand what he says about it, because it's, and on one hand, it's a very dark film. It's a very kind of like, you know, bleak film on one hand. When he talks about... it's about grief, death, and all those intense part of life that you'd rather not watch a film about. But on the other hand, there's some bits that are just really, really funny. And that's I think it's because these are real-life characters. These are people who...
Yeah.
And not everything in life is 100% horrible or 100% funny. It's kind of mixed in there. So it's not as if it says, okay, for the next 3 weeks, nothing funny will happen. It will all be dark, horrible. Yeah. There'll still be stuff in there that's kind of funny and comes off. And Kenneth Lonergan, who wrote and directed it, did a brilliant job with the film.
And that's based on a book, isn't it?
No, it's an original screenplay.
Is it really? Okay.
Original screenplay based on an idea by Matt Damon.
Well, it's Matt from what you described.
Matt Damon.
It sounds very reminiscent of a film that George Clooney did a number of years ago called The Descendants.
Yeah. It's the one in Hawaii.
The Hawaii one. It sounds reminiscent of that, because there's like it's underpinned by sort of this tragedy, but then there's humour in it as well.
Yeah, I think
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, The Descendants is good. Descendants is more, I would say Descendants is more of a comedy.
Has more humour in than
Manchester by the Sea.
Because I know my friends, when I went to see it with them, they couldn't understand why I was sobbing at the end. Because I'd lost my dad at that point, and they hadn't lost a parent.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, to me, it just hit me really, really hard how sad it was. And so, but they saw it, and they just saw the humour, and I saw I thought, I used to do that, and I used to do that, and I used to do that.
Mm.
When my dad was dying.
Yeah.
And so it was just really hit me. So I didn't watch Manchester by the Sea for that reason. I thought, I know what grief is like, and I don't know if I want to revisit it in a film.
Yeah, it's a film that I would recommend it to anybody, but with caveats.
Yeah.
I'll be like, make sure you're in a good place, because
you can just be sobbing by the end.
Yeah, you seriously can be. I remember there was a bit in the film where my jaw just hit the ground. I was just kind of like, and it had one of the best scenes of the year, which is you had Casey Affleck, and it was a film that was used a lot. It was a screen that was used a lot with Casey Affleck and Michelle Williams standing there, and they've been apart for a long time, and they're trying to sort of like they're trying to sort of just have a conversation, but there's this thing in between them, and they can't. And it's this scene about two people who just have serious trouble talking to each other because of something that they just can't get over.
Mm.
And it's played beautifully by the both of them. It's great. And I think I think Casey Affleck totally deserves his Oscar for that, because it's something that could very easily have just been a one-note miserable character that he manages to bring shades to. Mm. So it's Manchester by the Sea. I totally agree with that.
Good choice, Clem.
Good choice, Glenn. Now, we have Brian Curtis of This Parish. He is Brian who does the show after us. He does the eclectic mix after us at 7 o'clock. And he says, he says two things. He says 6 days, but that might not count as it was on Netflix only. I think it was actually in cinemas for a short while.
Right.
Okay, it was in cinemas for a short while, but Netflix also got the distribution right, so I think it might have been in cinemas for a week, and then Netflix got it.
What's the story to that, then?
It is about the incident in the 80s, I believe, when the whole world realized that the SES existed, I think.
With the embassy siege.
The embassy siege, yeah. And he has Jamie Bell, who plays the lead guy, who sort of like leads the attack on the siege, mm-hmm. or attack on the embassy to sort of like free the hostages and all that. And it's about what happened and like the news people outside and what was happening in government at that time and all. So apparently, It's quite a contained film. It's quite a bit suspenseful. I think you'd like it. I think it's. It seems like it has a little bit of 71.
Right, okay, yeah.
No, I don't think, not up to the level of 71, but it has a little bit of that almost sort of like chamber piece that where they're going in there. I haven't seen it myself, but it's something that I have on the list.
I'm looking at that.
6 days on Netflix now if you want to go see it. I've heard good things about it. And Brian also says Victoria and Abdul.
Okay.
Victoria and Abdul.
No, I went to see it, yeah.
Yeah, so I went to see Victoria and Abdul. Obviously, that was filmed in part on the Isle of Wight, where a lot of people got the email that sent out that said, oh, yeah, do you want to be an extra in this film and all that? I think, Sean, you had to grow a beard for a while. Then you didn't get chosen.
No. The beard obviously wasn't the right sort of beard.
It wasn't lustrous enough.
I was too tall, I think.
Yeah.
That's what they told me, anyway.
They have costumes that they... Because I know no one... All the ladies had to be a perfect size 10, I think, or 10 or 12, to fit the costumes that they had. And you had to be a certain height, and you had to be a certain... Yeah.
They said I was too tall, so maybe
they had all the costumes. I think they had a lot of these sort of set costumes. Mm. So some of my friends auditioned, and they were like, no, you've got to be a size 12, and you've got to be like 5'4" or something.
And I think, because I think, Sean, you were in too hot on this film, and maybe it was because of the beard that made you grow and never let you use.
Yeah.
So, it was an interesting story, though, because it's when you go to Osborne, obviously they have got the huge sort of Durbar suite, haven't they?
Yes.
It's just it dominates one half of the house. And then all lined down the corridors are the portraits of sort of the Indians from the subcontinent, as well as the servants from different parts of the world,
and Abdul himself. And
there's a big picture of him there.
Yeah, and I think I quite like the film. I think it wasn't quite as. It wasn't quite as intense as Mrs. Brown, for instance, which was the last time Judi Dench played Queen Victoria. It wasn't quite as intense as that, but I loved the. It's like so shining a light on, oh, this is what it was kind of like. And for me, I think the sort of strange absurdity of the British Empire and like, oh, the Queen wants a mango. We shall ship a mango all the way from India. And then the mango arrives. And then Abdul goes, this mango is off. And she's like, Sir Ponsonby, this mango is off. And he's like, we will get you another one. And that's going to be like another 3 months to bring a mango because the Queen wants to have
try a mango.
Yeah, and I think the whole idea that the Queen was a lot more forward-thinking than a lot of the people around her. And it was a lot more forward-thinking and just kept from doing a lot of stuff from people around her. And I think Eddie Izzard is very good in the film. And he is...
Yeah, he's the Prince of Wales.
Yeah, he's very good in the film. But he's a little bit of a boo-hiss pantomime villain. Every time he shows me, just like, boo-hiss, racist!
Because it makes you wonder, was he really as horrid as that? Because you think... Well, he became quite a good king.
Well,
a popular king. Well, that's the same thing. I don't know.
Well, a popular king, but I think I think the sort of views that he had towards Abdul and those on the Indian continent were held by a lot of people then.
It was entrenched.
I know that when you actually look at some of the things that he did, like just like the facts of it, as to whether what attitudes he had or anything, but the facts of some of it he did are consistent with the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought.
Yeah, it's a good film. I enjoyed it.
And we also have, I think, Moore White also said, Victoria Abdul. Moore White also of This Parish. Must be something about Vectis Radio presenters of Victoria and Abdul. Right, cool. Now, we have Peter Jenkins. Archie, wait. Before we go into Peter Jenkins things, we're going to have some words from our sponsors, and then we'll be back right after this to sort of zoom through to 7 o'clock with the rest of people's choices for the best film of 2017.
Get in touch. Give give us a call on 01983 240 666.
And we are back with the Movie Review Show, going through listeners' top films of the year. So, Peter Jenkins, who was the person who we were going to do before the break, is now, we're going to go on with him. He says, I have got to go with Blade Runner 2049.
Okay,
that's cool.
Yeah, lives up to all expectations. Now, this is a thing that I would say with Blade Runner. I remember watching that and going, yeah, this feels like it's a part of the first film.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it myself. I thought it was great. It was lovely visually as well.
Yeah, for all that it was a long film. I mean, it was sort of clocking up to nearly 3 hours.
It was
long,
nearly 3 hours long. Yeah,
yeah. I think it didn't feel that long when you were watching it because the pacing felt about right for that length of film, didn't it?
Yeah.
And there was enough going on that you were thinking, I need to know what happens. The next to keep you going.
See how it goes.
And there's a few sort of about faces, wasn't it, where you're going, whoa, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, there's a bit where you go, oh, okay, we see what you're doing, you're not doing that. No, you're not.
And it's like they sort of reeled you in and then went, gotcha.
Yeah.
So I was impressed by it. And it did feel like it was the same world, but just technology had moved on 20 years or however long it was since the previous film.
Yeah.
In that universe.
Yeah,
it felt like it was the same world, didn't it?
It did.
And I fell in love with that hologram girlfriend. Who's that actress? Because I would just love one of those things.
I went straight away.
Sean, I think we need to say this. You cannot just go find the actress and kidnap her. You cannot just find the actress and make her stay in your house, all right?
But one of those boxes that they have, or you know, whatever it is, like app or whatever it is.
We'll have a word with Apple and see what they can do.
That would be on my Christmas wish list, one of those.
I think she was called Love, was she?
No, Love. Yeah, I think
no,
she
there
was.
No, she was Joy.
Yeah, Joy, because...
Joy, and, Love was the other
and
one.
And then, yeah, yeah. And then at the end, like, there was lots of them, so... Yeah.
There was that giant holographic one, wasn't it? Who sort of knelt down almost and started talking to you.
It was quite extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah, but I think it's because you only think about the... That's probably the way advertising is going to go.
I think it probably will.
Yeah,
you know, I think that, there was like a film Ghost in the Shell, wasn't there? Which was
with
very much those hologramic.
Yeah. Hologram. Okay, now you see Ghost in the Shell. Put that beside Blade Runner, and you see, okay, this is how to do it, and this is how to take the clothing, but none of the heart.
That's it. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah. So it's all right. So Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, we agree.
That was good. Yeah. What's it?
Yeah. It was a very good film. I love the fact that it didn't try and pander and didn't try and say, oh, it's a sequel. We must blow things up. Mm. We must make everything look nice and shiny. Yeah. We must CGI everything.
Yeah. Or do the same story exactly the same way we did it before, because if it worked before, it's going bound to work again.
Yeah, I liked Blade Runner 2049. I think it was a film that you sit down and you think, hang on, I have to think about this. I think that was exactly the same with the first one. You're like, I'm not sure. Do I like it? Do I not like it? Is it? Was it too slow? Was it? And then you go and you think about it. And when you think about it, you think actually it's good. Right, and we have Peter Jenkins says a close second would be Dunkirk. A fantastically put together film. Big shout out to Brawl in Cell Block 99. Now, this was a very little scene film with Vince Vaughn going away from comedy and being like this. Apparently, the whole film is just like this brutal fight in a prison.
Wow. Did that come to the island?
I doubt it.
I don't think it did. It was very short. I think even around the country, it was like in and out.
Yeah.
In and out of cinemas. So hopefully coming soon to Netflix or something like that. Mm. But Brawl in Cell Block 99, I think is worth watching it. But he says, big shout out to Brawl in Cell Block 99, in brackets, just brutal.
Right.
Silence, which was the film with Liam Neeson, Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver.
Yeah. Yes.
About the Catholic priest to go to Japan in, I don't know what century.
I really enjoyed that movie.
You did?
I liked that movie, yeah. I thought it was a great movie.
I started reading the book, never saw the film. And, I've got to go see that. But he says it's the first film that has had me... The first one that just had me thinking about it ages after.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We're just going, oh, wow.
I saw that on a really big screen as well, and it was
quite
great.
Punch.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Because Andrew Garfield did two. He did Silence and Hacksaw Ridge, which came out quite soon afterwards, didn't it?
Yes, they did.
Cinematically, they were very close together in the cinema.
Yeah. And, he's had a good year.
He did
Breathe, this year.
Yeah, he's had a good year. He's sort of
real
slowly
mixture of stuff. Yeah.
Slowly going. Okay, I've got my money from Spider-Man. Now I can do interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so it's and he says John Wick Chapter 2 in brackets, yeah, the best action film of the year, pushed closely by Atomic Blonde.
Yep, see, now both of those movies I really, really enjoyed. Atomic Blonde was excellent. I think I gave that a terrific review when we spoke about it before. That was right up my street. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and who doesn't love Keanu? Kicking and shooting.
I mean, he's
about.
Totally reinvented himself, isn't he?
He really has.
I mean,
from being like this sort of stoner dude to being this sort of action hero, it's amazing. But with a twist, he's like an action with a twist, isn't he? He's not your.
He's not like buff. He's not like Arnie in the 80s action kind of guy.
No, he's like a new type of action.
You see, so also they're films that you can take quotes from, aren't they? Like John Wick's not the boogeyman, he's the man you send to kill the boogeyman. And if you can do quotes from movies, I think that's
good.
I know that was the original John
Wick. It's kind of like, you know, what they call hard-boiled dialogue. I think the thing with John Wick is, I've always maintained with Keanu Reeves, if you give him a director that knows how to use him, you can have a great film.
You've said that, yeah.
If you give Keanu Reeves a director that tries to make him act too much, then it kind of falls apart. So John Wick just sort of stays quiet, stares at people hard, and says one-liners, then shoots them in the face.
I'm thinking I'm back.
And funny enough, he says, best action film of the year, pushed closely by Atomic Blonde.
Atomic Blonde,
and Atomic Blonde was directed by the co-director of John Wick.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the first one was directed by Chad Stahelski and David Leitch. Second, John Wick was directed by Chad Stahelski. And then David Leitch went and he directed with Blonde.
So both were good choices.
Yeah. Really. Kicking and fighting and punching.
David Leitch is going to be directing the new Deadpool movie.
David Leitch?
David Leitch.
Oh, I was going to say David Leitch.
All right, cool.
We have Tom
Ainsworth, who says, Star Wars and Blade Runner, both very good. I have mostly been watching Marvel and DC films with my children this year. And so we've spoken of now Star Wars, because Star Wars, as we said, is like split people right down the middle. Right down, we reviewed that last week, and
I think that's sort of a generational thing. So I think there's a lot to do with that. So you're like your die-hard Star Wars fans are not particularly happy, but you're gonna have a much younger audience, audience which is
what. I think
Force Awakens seem to be better with it than the people who didn't like Force Awakens.
I think maybe Star Wars could go in that vein heading towards the audience, and then the standalone films, because I mean Rogue One was fantastic. So if they can do the standalone films for to be part of that universe, which would please a lot of the diehard.
I don't know it's that simple because I think there's people who love the original trilogy and I think there's people who do not like Star Wars who like this new one because it's doing something different. And I think that's whatever you want to say about it. People who like it because it's doing something different. And people who hate it because it's doing something different. So everybody's agreeing that it's doing something different.
For me, it's just those stupid bits that I'm like, no.
I don't think everything works in it. I do not think everything works in The Last Jedi. And we have Pete asking if we're going to do a worst film of the year. Yes, we're going to ask you for your worst film of the year next week. And Tom, because we are a community radio station, and so we care about what the community says, doesn't mean we agree with what the community says, but we care about what the community says.
That's the one I'm thinking.
Yeah, so Tom Ainsworth also says, I think it was last year, but Transformers, Age of Extinction.
Oh, that's just throwing a grenade into that nice calm pool, isn't
it's
it?
It's thrown a massive grenade into my mind.
Is this the best film of the year?
Best film,
saying?
Yeah, best film of the year.
I think we should talk about this one next time.
That's what I think, because there was Transformers the last Night was released this year. Age of Extinction was like 2 years ago, but still, come on. But he says it has a very good theme running through it, and it's a very good Mickey take of Apple, Johnny Ive, Steve Jobs, and Wozniak that most people have missed in the reviews. It makes the film much more interesting.
Okay.
Tom, I believe I've said this to your face before. I think you're thinking about it too hard.
I mean, he's got depth. We don't mind people with depth.
Yeah, have depth, but I'm still thinking. Thank you for getting in touch, Tom.
But you're wrong.
And we will hope to hear about your worst films of the year next week. But it's good. I have opinions, but I feel like he's not here to defend himself.
No, so I don't think you're a lunatic because we don't know.
So I don't. Okay, cool. We are quickly running out of time here. But we also had Giles Newth, who got in touch, and he says, us old folk don't get out as much as we used to, partly due to rheumatism, but mainly through because of the police dragnet. I don't get that, Giles. You're going to have to explain that to me later. But our favourite was the lovely Mr. Thor fella with his Ragnarok.
Oh yeah. Like a bit of Marvel.
Which we enjoyed immensely, especially as we saw it more or less in a horizontal position from those huge leather seats which tilt up and down at the Picture House in Southampton by West Keys.
Wow, yeah.
Thor's
a great movie.
Yeah, Thor Ragnarok.
Ragnarok's great.
I think they went down that hole. It was going to be a comedy film rather than a more serious Marvel film. So I think if you can live with the fact that it's a comedy.
Yes.
You can enjoy it, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
It's great,
yeah.
And I think that's going to carry on into the Infinity War, isn't it?
Well, I think there's going to be a little bit of that, but I think Infinity War is going to have to be a serious film because people are going to die.
Yes.
Characters are going to die. That's just the way. But yeah, I think Marvel had a great year. They had Spider-Man Homecoming. They had Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
And now they've got Fox. They're probably going to reboot, maybe.
No,
Fantastic Four.
I don't know about that. I think I would have to say something about, if we're talking about comic book movies, Wonder Woman, I thought was really, really good this year.
Good show.
I think that was the only good thing DC did this year, and the only good thing that they have done for a while. Yeah. And although I have to admit, for everybody who got in touch with the show, we want to say thank you very much. Thank you for getting there. But I am a bit perturbed and saddened by the lack of any Paddington 2 on this list.
Yay, maybe it's switching soon. But we like Paddington.
Paddington was hands down my film of the year. Paddington 2 was hands down my film of the year. I think no film this year nailed its ending as perfectly as Paddington 2 did. Yeah, Hugh Grant, come on. Watching somebody do stuff that you did not realize they could do. You've been watching him for like 20 years and you didn't realize he could do that.
People have
their own opinions and stuff like that, but I'm just a bit perturbed.
I haven't actually seen the original one, I've got to be honest.
You haven't?
Get out.
Watch them both. I think Paddington 2 is better.
I didn't like the little cartoon that they used to have on TV.
I know.
What did you say?
There was that little cartoon on TV which I never really
got. Michael Bond and Michael Horton didn't need to voice it.
Sorry, Sharon.
A magical moment of my childhood.
Sorry, Sharon. I'm sorry, mate.
Did you ever notice the Michael Bond cameo in the first Paddington?
No, I didn't.
In Paddington, when you watch the first Paddington movie again, when Paddington first arrives in London and he's going through the back of London, he's looking out the back of a cab.
Yeah.
There's an old man who raises a glass of wine.
Oh, is that Michael Paddington. Bond?
That's Michael Bond.
Oh, wonderful.
The creator of Paddington. Yeah, it's just like probably one of the best cameos of recent. Like in a world that's going a bit cameo Paddington. Crazy, it's one of the best cameos. All right, so thank you to everybody who got in touch with us this evening, to everybody who let us know about their. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, we just had Brian who showed me a list. Brian, who used to work for the BBC, says that Mr. Bond was an ex-BBC cameraman. So, yay, ex-BBC cameraman. BBC. Right, thank you for everybody who got in touch with the show this evening. Tune in to us next week. Watch the Facebook page because we'll be talking about films that are the worst. And now we'll hand you over to the news.
Wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.